Carolina fans, welcome to the NLCS postseason edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me from New York this week, the same place I am right now, he is the last man to take the New York Mets to the World Series back in 2015, their former manager, current analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, Terry Collins. And TC, I know you're up there for some work, but also had a big celebrity golf outing with Tunnel to Towers, which we're going to discuss a little bit later on in the program. But Terry, there's no better place to be if you're a baseball fan than New York right now, and we will get into all of that in just a second. But you got a hero of the 2015 postseason coming up later on Talking with TC.
Yeah, it's great to be back. It is exciting up here right now, John. And no matter where you go, they're talking baseball. But there's nobody to talk baseball better than to have Dan Murphy on the show again today. You know, this is you talk about being in the playoffs, and immediately he comes to mind with what he did in 2015. And it'll be fun to talk with Murph.
Oh, absolutely. One of the most remarkable postseasons in the history of baseball. So we look forward to that. But let's get right into the leadoff. The Mets are in New York getting ready for game three of the NLCS against the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're in that National League Championship Series, having disposed of the Philadelphia Phillies in four games at the Division Series. Let's get your take on the past 7 days for the Mets. First, the Philadelphia Series. How great was it to see this team knock out Philadelphia with two wins at Citi Field, led by their MVP of the Mets, Francisco Lindor, hitting a grand slam in Game 4, which led to the first postseason clinching celebration on its home field, dating back to the stadium opening in 2009.
Yeah, they are, you know, they're just hot. They're, you know, everybody, if you're in the playoffs and you're the hottest team, you're going to go a long way. And, you know, what they did to the Phillies to hold that lineup down. And we talked about this on one of the shows, John, about what, you know, the key was going to be the starting pitching. And the Mets starting pitching just stepped up against a very, very good lineup and shut them down. I mean, the job they've done to with Manaea and Quintana, I mean, those guys have really stepped up, and it's just changed the way the bullpen has been had to be used. And they've got big hits from a lot of, you know, I know Francisco, the grand slam was big, but I'm going to tell you, they got big hits from a lot of different people. And when you can spread that through your lineup with different guys coming through, you're going to be a tough team to beat. And it's just I just think they're clicking. They believe in themselves. They believe they can no matter what part of the game they're in, they're going to win. And I think right now they're in a great spot. I certainly think the Dodger pitching is in turmoil right now. If you don't, you know, if they don't, you're only going to see Yamamoto one time. I think the Mets are in a good spot right now.
Yeah, I do too. They are home after splitting the first two games against the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that's always your goal. If you can't sweep, get a split in the opening when you're away from home. Game one, Kodai Senga did not find his way as the starter in game one. The team showed its resilience, a season-long resilience in game two, led once again by a leadoff home run by who else but Francisco Lindor in the first inning. And then Lindor gets intentionally walked in the second, load the bases for Mark Vientos, and he hits a grand slam. It gives him a 6-0 lead. Vientos said it took it personally when Lindor was walked to get to him. Your thoughts on the first two games of this LA Dodgers New York Mets series?
Well, obviously the first game, I mean, Flaherty really pitched very, very well. And, you know, but it was only one game. And I don't care what the final score was. You know, again, they believed in themselves. And it's amazing. It was amazing to me in game two that a team as good as the Los Angeles Dodgers don't have enough starting pitching, that they had to go to a bullpen game, the second game of in the playoffs, in the championship series, and then Mets made them pay. I mean, you know, you can run all those relievers out there, but once in a while they're going to run out of gas, and they look like they were out of gas, and the Dodgers made it, you know, or the Mets made it all count. But, about Mark Vientos, hey, if that's what fires him up, that he thinks that, you know, that it's an insult to walk Lindor, of course you're going to walk the guy. The guy's, he's a possible MVP. So, you know, and good for Mark. If that's what gets him going, put a great swing on the pitch itself. But he certainly has shown that He belongs here, and he's going to stay here for a long time.
Yeah, we've seen a star develop right before our eyes, especially in this postseason. He's really came to play, and he's making a mark every time he's on the field. It'll be a rocking city field this week for games 3, 4, and potentially game 5 on Friday. Manager Carlos Mendoza is going with Luis Severino in game 3, Jose Quintana in game 4. Game 5 starter yet to be named. So I'm going to ask you, TC, if it goes to a game 5, would you give the ball back to Senga or maybe give the ball to David Peterson, or do they need Peterson in the bullpen for the next few games?
Well, I think the next three games will dictate who's going to be in game 5. I'd be very careful with Senga. You know, I watched the game the other day, and I just didn't like the way the ball was coming out of his hand. I mean, control was one thing, but when I've been around enough pitching, and especially Japanese pitching, the one thing they could always do, they can control strikes. And when you're not throwing strikes, that for me is a red flag. There's something wrong. So I think they got to be very, very careful there. But again, what they've got to worry about right now is tonight's game and tomorrow night's game. And game 5 will take care of itself when it rears up. It may be, it may be David Peterson. That'd be the guy I would turn to. He certainly has earned a chance to get back out there. But I'd be very careful with Senga.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to wait to see what happens as the series unfolds. There's some other question marks with the Mets right now. Brandon Nimmo has been battling with plantar fasciitis, so he's not 100%. Jeff McNeil is activated for this. Jose Iglesias is kind of not really slumping, but he's cooled off a little bit. Would you spell either Nimmo or Iglesias to get McNeil some playing time in this series?
Well, I probably would. You activated him for a reason, and that's his bat. And so if Iglesias, do you think maybe, look, he might be tired. He's played a lot of baseball, more than he has in a long time. But, Jeff hasn't, he's only had 10 at-bats in the last 6 months or 3 months. So yeah. I think you got to be very, very careful with Jeff. But, if you activated this guy because you wanted his bat, I think you need to get him some at-bats, because there is going to be at some time in one of these games where he's going to be sitting on that bench, and it's going to be very important for him to feel comfortable when he gets back in that batter's box. And the only way you can get that comfort is to get some at-bats now.
Yeah, and he's a lefty, and they certainly could use a left-handed bat off the bench for sure. The other question is the DH spot. JD Martinez has kind of not played yet. Mendoza's thinking of putting him in. Do you prefer Jesse Winkler, or if you were managing, giving JD a shot by inserting him as a DH in this series?
Well, again, John, I think you got to go with what's been working for you, and that's been Jesse Winkler. I mean, he's come through with some big hits. And if you like that, you can always, if they bring in, and the one thing about the Dodgers, they only got the one left-handed reliever. So, and they're going to probably save him. And if it's Jesse Winker and you're Dave Roberts and you got JD Martinez on the other team's bench, you might take your chance with Winker. So, JD's an awful good hitter. So, it's tough. It's a tough decision, but Carlos certainly and all the data they have and all the way they feel, but it's what it's been working. You got to keep going with it.
Yeah. And he certainly has proven himself as far as making great decisions and has just really been just a wonderful manager throughout this whole season. And now when the games count the most, I think he's doing a wonderful job, and this team is looking great. Finally, the crosstown New York Yankees, they're up 2-0 against Cleveland in the ALCS. Just 2 more gets them into the World Series, and the Mets are needing 3 more wins as we record this to get there as well. We could be looking at a potential rematch of the 2000 Subway World Series. How great would that be for New York, especially in a season no one thought that this was even a possibility at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be exciting for the city. I mean, I was at a golf tournament yesterday, and I will tell you, the talk at this thing was all about baseball. And, there were Yankee fans there were Mets fans there, and they are so excited to think that there might be a Subway World Series, and that would be so cool for the city. And I will tell you, I actually played with some guys from Fox Sports, and they are really excited to think that they might have the two big market teams, in the Subway Series. So I think it's be great, and I certainly I truly believe that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, you kind of get that feeling like they're getting ready. It's like it's all going to lead to a rematch from 2000. Terry, you talked about that golf tournament you were at, and that was part of a Tunnel to Towers Foundation tournament, and it was held at Liberty National in Jersey City. You were part of it. You spoke about it. Tell us about that, how your day was yesterday, and what it was like being at that celebrity golf tournament.
Well, it was a blast. I mean, there, of course, there are a lot more Yankees than there were Mets there. I can tell you, I think John Franco and I were the only two Met guys there. I mean, you had David Wells and Leiritz and, that's right, Nelly Figueroa was there, so we had three of us. But it was a lot of fun. Again, anytime you're around Frank Siller, you got to get excited. This guy is as positive a human being as I've ever been around in my life, and what he has done and the way he can rein in people and what he's done with that foundation is off the charts amazing. They had people there yesterday who he has helped, who they have paid off their mortgages, and you should just see them, John. They're walking on cloud nine. I mean, it's just so cool to be around them. Huge turnout. Matter of fact, the golf course had to go borrow golf carts from another golf carts because they had so many people playing in this thing. And they raised, before the tournament started, Frank had already raised $1 million for Tunnel to Towers. And that is absolutely incredible. And last night they had an auction at the dinner, and people couldn't put their hands up fast enough. The bidding for things, and it was fast. Again, just one of those exciting things. Anytime I've done something with Tunnel to Tower, you leave there with a smile on your face.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so happy that you were able to do that yesterday, and I'm sure they were happy to have you there. And like you said, they raised $1 million before it even started yesterday. Because the work that they do, they just broke ground on a Veterans Village in Buffalo last week. That facility alone is going to provide permanent housing for nearly 100 homeless vets. It'll also include comprehensive on-site services, including drug testing, drug treatment, education, mental health, PTSD counseling, job training, benefits assistance, and so much more. And T2T is going to start work on two more veterans residences later this month, one in Detroit, one in Charleston, South Carolina. These facilities will provide permanent housing for our homeless vets. So TC, what a wonderful foundation. So happy you're a part of it. I'm sure you had a great time. We're going to be back with our special Talking with TC right after this word from New York Mets bench coach John Gibbons for Tunnel to Towers.
Hi, I'm bench coach John Gibbons. Let's go Mets. Let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
I'm involved in professional baseball, right? And, kids, people look up to, we're not the real heroes. Military, vets, firemen, and cops, those are your real heroes. We all don't lay it on the line, but we sure look for them when we need something, don't we? A simple donation of just $11 a month will go a long way to support our first responders, military families, and our veterans who are in need. These are the true heroes who protect us all.
And now it's time for Talking with TC. It's only fitting during this amazing 2024 New York Mets run to bring back, for his second appearance on the show, the player who in 2015 had one of the most amazing postseasons, not just in Mets history, but Major League Baseball history as well. He hit home runs in an amazing six consecutive games during the NLDS, NLCS that year, and will forever live in the hearts of Mets fans. And before we bring on our special guest, let's go back and take a look at his amazing postseason 9 years ago.
That ball's well hit to right. I mean, really well hit to right.
That ball is going to go. Daniel Murphy parks it in the bullpen. The Mets have the lead. 1-0 here in the fourth.
Diving stop by Murphy. Gets up, flips to Familia, out at first.
All the Murph moments have been good Murph moments tonight.
Murphy lines one left field. Base hit. Lagares scores, and the Mets keep adding to it.
And the pitch to the lefty is hit high, hit well, right field. This ball is going to go! Home run! Murphy did it to him again!
for the second time in this series, takes Clayton Kershaw deep.
Oh, did the Mets need that?
Pretty well hit. Jock Peterson goes back. That's off the wall. Granderson will score. Murphy digging for third. He dives in safely without a relay throw. That is ball four. They're at first and second.
And Murphy now tearing from second to third. Nobody's covering third. Daniel Murphy with the heads-up play of the night. He's going to score on a sack fly. It's 2-2.
And it's all because of Murphy and the heads-up base runner. Here's the guy that Cal spotlighted as a guy who could make a difference for the Mets in this decisive game five.
Swinging a drive deep to right, down the line, and there it goes. It is 3-2 New York, and Daniel Murphy is writing some kind of story. Ripped in the air, deep to right, it's on the way. Pepsi Porch, home run. And the magical ride of Daniel Murphy continues. That's unbelievable.
This narrative is taking on a whole new texture now. More of a just sporting than a bat flip, really. Kind of like, yeah, this is what I'm doing now. I'm Daniel Murphy.
One hop by a diving Murphy. He's got it. Throws to first. Put it in the books. Daniel Murphy punctuates another magnificent Murphy performance.
I don't know what Daniel Murphy is eating or drinking, but I want some.
Murphy sizzled at the plate again yesterday and dazzled with the glove. He's in second base, batting number three.
Breaking ball lifted in the air. Deep to right, down the line. Got a chance, might go. He did it. Home run. Unbelievable. Daniel Murphy does it again. City Field looks like it's going to come apart at the seams. Holy smokes! What's gotten into him?
That's four straight games with a home run in the postseason for Murphy. No Met has ever done that before. That ball going to the track. Are you kidding? Daniel Murphy, one more time, buries it into the bleachers in right center field.
Man alive, Daniel Murphy has homered for the fifth straight postseason game. Six home runs, nine runs batted in this postseason.
This is beyond belief.
And Daniel Murphy is now hit in all nine postseason games the Mets have played. Swinging a looper left field base hit. Who are you? And what have you done with Daniel Murphy? Give Murphy a double this time, and he continues to just sizzle here the entire postseason.
He did it! Another home run for Murphy! Murphy has now homered in six straight postseason games.
He's the MVP of the planet right now.
Well, that was incredible.
Well, Skipper, I couldn't ask for a better manager to do it with. That was fun. Yeah. It gives me chills right there.
Me too. Huh. So, you know, Dan, I think the question I probably have would like to talk to you about is, you know, what was going through your mind during this whole time? I mean, were you just locked in? I mean, what were you thinking to yourself?
Yeah, I think the best way I've honestly described it is like when you're hitting and your eyes say, like, it's time to go, and then your body does what your eyes ask it to do and you're moving fast and making good decisions. I think that was probably one of the biggest things was like you had me when I would swing at anything, and I still have a tendency to do that. But then once I was able to, with K-Long and Six, to like shrinking up that zone and then know I don't have to go fast and be accurate everywhere. If I'm just first here, then I can kind of go as fast as I want. And then, you know, I honestly remember the series where we play the Nationals at home against Jordan Zimmermann. So the inning where we end up cracking the homers, Grandy gets him. Right. I get Jordan, and then Duda gets him down
Duda
the line.
Him, yep.
And that was the first night where K-Long and Six were like, hey, let's take the governor off right here. Let's, like, try to get this thing going to the pool side in the air. And then to get rewarded, and Zim, like, he's a strike thrower, so I could kind of cheat my turn a little bit. I could call a little hit and runs on myself because he was going to meet you right in the zone. And then, you know, in the postseason, these guys, they're so good and their stuff's so good. The reason they are is because they get deep in games. And then so Clayton's a strike thrower. Maybe where in this regular season I would foul that ball back. And even in my first at bat against him, he struck me out. I get him in the second at bat, game one. And it's like, well, maybe it's not going too fast for me. Because after my first at bat, when he punched me on three pitches, I was like, oh my goodness, this is a different speed right here. It just was different. But yeah, I would say that's it. You know, my eyes said yes and my body listened for, you know, a couple weeks.
Dan, had you ever gone through that? I mean, it was, you were coming up. I mean, you've always been a good hitter. Did you ever have that before the playoffs? I mean, do you ever have a streak like that?
I would say I've been on a heater of accuracy. Like, so in 2011, it was actually a little bit of a story I'd tell. Like, so in 2011, we break, and Brad Emus, he breaks as the second baseman, and I'm on the SWAT team with Willie Harris, so I'm coming off the bench. And there was a stretch there where I thought, I'm going to get, like, just sent back down to the minor leagues because I'm not being very productive at all. And for probably maybe a six-week stretch after I made some sort of adjustment, who knows if it helped or not, it made me feel better, and I started hitting singles and some doubles. And the reason I remember this, I think that I was swinging it well, at least accuracy, was we were in Cincinnati, and Homer Bailey threw me a 3-0 curveball for a strike. And I was like, what on earth? That's only for, like, the dangerous people, you know what I mean, who hit doubles and homers. And so I was like, okay, maybe I'm seeing the ball pretty well. But as far as, like, being able to do it, like, for damage, no, never, ever like that.
So, Murph, you know, one of the questions I always wanted, because I've been peppered with a lot of these since our time in 2015, what do you think effect we had by that with the 5-day layoff before we went to the World Series? Do you think that had an effect on everybody?
I think that probably it would have helped us, the heater that we were on. I think I would say that I probably would have been better suited even personally, just gone ahead and playing, maybe got a couple days to think about it, went around the city, and you know, people were stoked and excited, and you're like, oh, this is a big deal, which, you know, winning the pennant is a big deal. So going from straight from LA game five, right into the Cubs series, I think there was some aspect to that was, I didn't have enough time to kind of think about how big this situation was and how important and monumental it could be in the history of, you know, the Mets franchise to win it. So, you know, unfortunately we came up short for the World Championship. We did hang a pennant. And I think that as I've gone back in baseball a little bit and kind of, you know, got to learn more about John McGraw, I was wondering if I've placed too much emphasis on the World Championship, put that on such a high pedestal that maybe it paralyzed me a little bit, and maybe too little on the achievement of winning a pennant. Because once upon a time, winning a pennant was like, there, you know, that's what got you to the World Series. So, but yeah, I think we would have been better suited playing. Now, that's to take nothing away from the Royals. One of their skills was accuracy. And they were accurate and hit some ground balls to me that I didn't field properly. And you know, they ended up winning that series. But we were playing so well coming out of the Cubs series. I mean, shouldn't forget that, like, Lucas bangs the homer in game four to get us going. Each one of our pitchers, like Bartolo, had found a nice zone in that kind of multi-inning reliever sort of role where you could grab some innings from him. Darnold, I think, went deep that game four. Just we were swinging the bat really well pitching well too. So I think it would have helped. But.
Yeah, I did too. You know, I realize right now in the playoffs, you've got three division winners, you know, who won their division throughout the season. But, you know, I always thought that 5 days, you know, we were on such a high, and we, you know, it was tough. And I called every manager I knew about how can I, you know, what can I do to keep these guys' energies up? And nobody had any suggestions. Leland didn't, Torrey didn't, La Russa didn't. And I thought, man, because I didn't want to have, like, simulated games because, you know, our guys would have been, you know, our pitchers, they didn't want to hit anybody. So they,
you're out there getting your at bats, but then it's at what cost? If I'm not mistaken, I think Ted Williams played in a simulated game before the World Series. He might have taken one in the hand. So it's like, I want to keep the guys sharp, you know what I mean, and face some pitching, but then, you know, you don't want one to get away from me. I know that. And you know what? As you said that too, Kauffman Stadium was something different than I had ever experienced before. And then when they socked us in the mouth that first swing, it kind of took me back. But we did. We end up answering back and getting our split there, and we were in position. I think somebody said we were like, we might have led like every ball game, I think, late in those ball games. I hurt whatever the stat was, it hurt my heart and my soul to see because I think we led almost every single ball game pretty late.
Yeah, we did. And that was, you know, but that's baseball. I mean, we had to finish it off. You know, I had a talk with, I was at a golf tournament yesterday and Jimmy Leyritz was there. And he hit that big home run for the Yankees one time. And I asked him about, you know, his thought process and, you know, how did he prepare for those some of those at bats? And he said, you know, all he wanted to know was what the pitcher had. You know, what kind of pitches did he throw? Dan, when you were getting ready, because this was way before we had all the numbers. I mean, we just, you know, we pretty much had videos. Did you watch a lot of video of Kershaw or Arrieta or those? Did you just say, hey, look, I've seen these guys before. I know what to expect.
Like a bit of both. And so I would take the past experiences, and I like to watch the starting pitcher that day, the twirler, probably his last 10 to 12 at bats against left-handers. So I'd pull Clayton up against his last like 10 or 12 batters against lefties. So, you know, in the postseason, by the time we got him, it would have been maybe his last start or two of the regular season. Same with Arrieta. So I would have watched Arrieta start like in that wild card game on the way through and watched those starts. And then what I would try to do is I would pick, like, they each pitcher has a shape. So, like, with Clayton, since he's a lefty, one of the biggest things that would get me from lefties were the ones that would, like, run in on me. They'd run off the plate. Clayton doesn't throw much of a runner. A lot of what Clayton throws is moving away from me. So what I would do is I would look at the film, and I would want to pull Clayton very close, because if he walked me off the plate to, like, the corner away, well, then he would throw that kind of curve right off of that. And now I'm just fishing, you know what I mean? I can't cover that. Right. But if he throws one close to me, it's not going to walk in off the plate. I can still get a good meaty part of the plate, hopefully. And then same kind of situation with Arrieta. So I would just pick a spot and a shape. And if the ball started there, I was gone. I was going to send it. You know, and then with Clayton, know that he wants to meet you in the zone. Like, Clayton's trying to touch the seventh inning. He knows that if he can link it to Kinley back there, and then Baez as well too, he's trying to get as deep as he can. So if you get 2-0 with him, he wants to meet you right in the zone. He's not going to try to throw a kill shot curve or be too fine. And so you can call little hit and runs on yourself and think, maybe I'll figure it out on the way there, because he's going to be around the zone, hopefully. Yeah. Like, he ain't never thrown one in my face, so I take a little chance, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, Dan, at the end of your career, analytics were part of it. Did you feel at the end maybe that they put too many things in your mind? I mean, I talked to a couple of people that, and they're talking about how, you know, they try to break down all the pitchers now to like percentages. You're going to, in a 2-2 count, you got a 30% this or a 40% chance this. Is that too much, do you think, for hitters? I mean, you were an attack guy. So do you think sometimes we're starting to put too much info in their heads?
I think that the hitter today, like the batsman today, has a lot more has a lot tougher job distilling how much information they're getting. You know what I mean? Figuring out what they need to go in there and hunt and what just goes off to the wayside. And you kind of get that with experience, but now they're getting so much information. So we would have kind of like data about percentages, kind of to your point, but I would say not as detailed to like, here's his axis type of thing. Like, if the ball is skipping through the zone, then match the plane of it like a little shallower, kind of like a golfer. And if he's throwing a sinker, then try to scoop and score. Like, I stole that from Justin Turner. And so, like, we can use our eyes and the data, I think, as well. But, you know, it's kind of a game of blackjack, you know what I mean? Because we're trying to put the players in the best percentages, like situations to succeed. So when I'm at the blackjack table, like, I want to double on 11 versus 6 because I'm trying to get you right here. But my most fun blackjack is when I'm just playing, not when I'm getting the numbers jammed down my throat and trying to do this. And so it's taking that data and turn it into something that can go fast. Because like this time of year, they're moving so fast that you just don't need to be thinking about anything other than this pitcher is going to throw a giant punch at me. And then I need to pick where I want it to start so that my swing can match the scoreboard. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like if the scoreboard says be accurate, then I need to be accurate. You know what I mean? And if I think that he can strike me out with two strikes, then I better not get there. But if I take a YOLO swing 0-1 to get to 0-2 on a ball I should have put in play, well, we got to have a talking to now because your swing didn't match the scoreboard. Like, to me, that's not a data sort of situation. That's like, how are we hunting? How are we looking how to hunt right here? And so
– yeah. You know, I know you threw out the first pitch the other day, so you were around the club. What's the atmosphere like with the Mets right now?
Man, well, we caught them game four, and I thought that they really handled the Philly lineup better than I thought, like really navigated it really well, the pitching staff. Manaea is throwing the ball really well. And it'll be, I think the tenor of the ball club is they've got something going on. I mean, you're one of four teams left. And so if you were to stop long enough, which is not saying they're going to, and look around and be like, it most certainly could be us. There's only four of us left. And one of them is getting, they look overmatched across town. So it's looking like a three-horse race, to be honest with you. And that's not to discount Stephen Vogt and his ball club over there. They just, they looked a little overrun in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
So, of course, it could be them. And I think that's how they're playing. I think they trust leaving it late in ball games because they've come back. I would say it was probably a breath of fresh air when Vientos hit that grand slam to do something early and kind of get going to like get on the front foot and kind of attack. So you tell me what you think, Skipper, like watching more postseason baseball, it just all comes down to these platoon matchups.
Yeah,
so like
Soto
gets walked last night because they're willing to go right against Judge. So you got, can you win your platoon matchups and can your ringers be matchup kind of proof? You know what I mean? So, I think it'll be interesting. I think maybe Iglesias and McNeil, what happens there, and then also at the DH spot, because you have JD and Winker as well. So,
yeah, I'm a little concerned.
I like another left-handed bat for him.
Like, yeah,
I'm
concerned about the foot, about Brandon's foot, because I had 1 year in Anaheim, Tim Salmon had plantar fasciitis, and I'm telling you what, it killed him to stand up on it.
Yeah, and there's no running from it, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I'm just, but you know, you, I guess when you're in the playoffs and you're in a big situation, that doesn't hurt, that foot doesn't hurt quite as bad.
We've been around a clubhouse before. We can keep it G-rated of what guys have said to do and have been willing to do to get on the menu for a postseason baseball game. So I don't doubt that Brandon will be out there. Hopefully he's moving and this isn't bothering him too awful much.
Right. Dan, have you ever seen anybody do what Manaea's done? And that's changed his arm angle mid-season. I mean, and all of a sudden alter the way he pitches. That's amazing to me.
Now, maybe not mid-season, but I was talking about this on the radio here, a local Jacksonville, local show, The Drill. You remember Charlie Morton? He changed his style to Roy Halladay. So he was in Pittsburgh, and then towards the end, I think, of his career in Pittsburgh, it might have been like maybe the last half of the season or so, but he just started going Roy, Doc Halladay. He imitated Doc's style. And if you're going to imitate a style, it's pretty good. Well, like the ball started coming out better, and he signed the one-year deal in Philly. I don't know if you remember that. And he got a couple starts against us, and he threw the ball well to the point that I said, this is going to be a problem. Because usually against right-handed pitchers, I don't – like with the platoon advantage, I don't ever feel overwhelmed kind of. Uh-huh. And he was throwing some curves, and the ball was coming. I was like, this is going to be a problem. That was the year he got hurt. And so he got hurt that year, and I think the next year he ended up in Houston, if I'm not mistaken. But some sort of timeline. Yeah. So to answer your question – Charlie Morton is the only one I've heard, and I don't know if he did it midseason, but I know he did it. But like the results that Sean Manaea has had doing this, and he looks so uncomfortable for left-handed batters right now, so uncomfortable.
Well, you saw, I mean, some of the swings that Ohtani's taken. I mean, you tell he's uncomfortable.
He can't see. Like he's not able to stick his nose, and I get it in there long enough because, like Sean's, you saw. Did you see the bullpen he was throwing? The way he warms up,
yes,
where he does the diagonal one,
where the catcher's in the other side, yeah.
And maybe one turn around and hit right-handed. I'll get at you like Roger Hornsby. Forget this.
Yeah, yeah.
But even against the righties, he's landing that curve to get strike one. Like he's a real kind of like top of the rotation at this time of year, and they're becoming fewer and far between as we see. Yeah. I mean, Garrett threw the ball really well last night, or not Garrett, that was Rodon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But he's not getting quite as many swings and misses, I don't think, this year. So he'll have to maybe work a little bit harder, but.
Yeah, I mean, but I've never seen anybody change an arm angle like that and not get hurt. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Wonder if it's more efficient for him. Like a natural style for him, where he just, I'm going to do this like Sale, but then he turns it into his own sort of style because it looks like he's hiding it as well too. Not only is it coming from behind you, he's kind of slinging it to you. It's coming out of his hand good.
yeah, because I, you know, years ago, I remember when I grew up in the Dodger organization. Boy, I'll tell you, our pitching guys, if you threw across your body, they were always worried about injuries. And here's a guy that has reinvented himself in May or June or whenever it was. And he steps across and he's throwing across his body. He's dropped his arm angle. It truly is a testament to, you know, hey, look, I've got to change something to get better. And he's done it. I salute him. So
without a doubt, it's brave to do something like that. You know, you don't know. I mean, he's really been really good for him. And then, you know, again, I knock on wood, but the pitching health this year has been unreal.
Yeah, I tell you, Lindor, what an impact he's made, huh? Leading off.
Oh, I like how you have your leader just basically let the other ball club know, like, you're going to be in a fight. Like, this is, I liked how Nimmo used to do it in that one hole, but it seems that Francisco has really found a place there. And then not to mention, like, when you get boat race like you did game one, we'll all say it's one game, which it is. You know what I mean? And I thought the Dodgers won it properly. The Mets lost it properly. Like, nobody was overly wounded as far as, like, one game. But it's a race to four, and you're behind. So for him to come out and crack a homer that first at bat and just kind of let everybody know, no, it's like, we're here. Like, we're here to play. Like, you're going to be in a fight today.
Yeah. I was shocked, Dan, about how as good a ball club as the Dodgers are, they're starting pitching, man. I mean, I got to like – the Mets got to like what they're seeing. I mean
– I like the Mets starting pitching as far as matchups. I would say that's, to me, almost hands down. And, like, the Dodgers, they've all broken. Like, all their guys are hurt. I mean, we did this list. It's so funny we're doing this. We kind of went through this list on the radio. It's like Glasnow, Gonsolin's down, May's down. Then some of the – yeah, Clayton, unfortunately, is down, which he said he's going to try to come back next year. So best of luck and good health to him, because that's an old hunter right there, and I love to watch him hunt. I'd love to see him come back and get some more innings. And then some of the younger guys, which I'm missing their names now, but, you know, it's Yamamoto, who threw the ball well the other day, which I thought was really important for the Dodgers, because tell me what you think, and this will be real quick. I actually preferred the Dodgers after the first three games of the division series. And then once the Dodgers just completely dismantled San Diego without breaking a sweat game four and five, it kind of took me back and then to win games. So, but now I thought finding Yamamoto in that series as another starter was could be key for the Dodgers, because they lack starting pitching right now.
Yeah, I just think, you know, the Mets lineup is so deep that – you know, if you don't have quality people out there, you know, those believers, you know, and I think it's great. I know that really, you know, bullpens are now the thing you have to have. You got to have a strong bullpen, because starting pitching doesn't go deep. Matter of fact, I was shocked in the Yamamoto game. You brought it up. This guy was dealing, man. He was dealing. And yet they started the game saying, hey, he's going to give us five and we're going to the pen. And I'm going to tell you, you know, I saw a few years ago, one of the old Dodger clubs, I mean, their bullpen was really good, and they got, all of a sudden they fell flat. They got tired at the end.
Well, that's a lot. It's a lot of innings, and it's a lot to account for now, because these guys are just throwing massive, huge punches this time of year. Like, everybody's redlining it from the first pitch. So if you're a bullpen guy, you're not going to come in here and try to feather in a breaking ball. Like, you're trying to just boom, fifth gear. And so to your point, like, it's going to cost more. So if you get them up again, you know, maybe you get them up and they have to get down and they get in, and then the next night you get them in. And then the more the batsman sees them, the better off he's going to be. And it's just difficult to ask these guys over the course of it. And well, that's what we'll see in the long series, because they're probably going to have to bullpen game it again.
Absolutely.
And it just, that's why we'll see what kind of length you can get. Cause last time, and you can see it in the San Diego series a little bit, cause last time Buehler went out, like if it's a do or die game, like, you go and hook him, but he needed to get a little bit of length from Walker. He ended up giving up maybe the six runs. And to his credit, he kept taking the ball each inning. I kept keeping thought Doc was going to go get him. And we'll see. Hopefully the Mets can get some traffic out there tonight, because at the point that you knock him out, obviously, with the amount of use that has been put on the Dodgers bullpen that the Mets haven't gotten, it's going to cost. And hopefully you can get yourself an advantage where the batters can capitalize on it.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be a great experience tonight. I mean, to be back at coming back to Citi Field, and you're on at a nice roll, coming back on a positive note. I think it's we're going to see some big things tonight. So, hopefully.
Yeah, I think the atmosphere will be second to none. I'm envious that I'm not up there.
Well, I know John's got some questions for you, so we'll get him back on the screen here.
Good. All right, excellent. Thank you, Terry. Daniel, I want to go back in time a little bit. You made your major league debut in 2008, and at that time the Mets were in a playoff chase that fell short, missing a spot, and they lost on the final day of the season, which was also the last game ever at Shea Stadium. What do you remember about that season as a rookie falling short and the significance of that final game at Shea?
The final game at Shea, like the series against the Marlins, felt kind of just like a little ominous, I would say, hazy, like almost like we were somewhat anticipating something bad to happen as opposed to, like, you know, taking the game by the scruff of the neck and making something, you know, good happen. And to my, you know, as well, for some reason, I remember the Cubs series at Shea Stadium. Like, they felt, because they were a playoff team that year, if I'm not mistaken. Like, Derek Lee was at first base, and they just had a really good year. I think Giovanni Soto was catching, and I'm going to miss a ton of names because, like, things were moving really fast for me. But I just remember kind of the atmosphere of playing the Cubs late in September, of thinking, wow, this kind of feels like this is, like, these are big boys out here. These are men, and I felt kind of tiny, but was able to hold my own. And then probably Philadelphia, like going there and kind of and really feeling that atmosphere. I think, you know, was able to hit a ball down the line off of Lidge to give us a lead late in a ball game. And I remember Damian Easley, I think maybe had popped up out after me and he came in, and I'm young at this time. So I'm thinking he's going to be somewhat frustrated because he got out and missed, I think, a chance to extend the lead even more. And he came straight up to me and just was like, great hit. That was an awesome at bat. And I was like, oh my goodness, this guy wasn't really thinking about himself at all. I was like, that's how you stick around here for a long time, hopefully. So those were some of the memories I have of that.
Daniel, I have a personal memory of you from that season, 2008. The Mets were in Atlanta in September of that year. You were brought up, played your first game in August. But you made a lifelong impression on a 10-year-old boy, my nephew Dominic DiBiase, who does some research for this show. We met you in an elevator with your family at the Westin Buckhead in Atlanta. I wanted to pull up that photo and show you that shot with my young nephew, Dominic.
Look how young we are.
He became a huge fan of you. I know. You were just brought up, and he became a fan that day, which lasts until today. We're going to the game tonight. We're going to the game tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I wanted to personally thank you for that. I really did. It was such a great memory. And you've been getting more involved with the Mets this year by doing some announcing in spring training during the season. You got to throw at that first pitch before the clincher last week. Talk to us about how it feels to be back in the fold with the Mets organization, even on a limited role right now. And do you hope to have more involvement in 2025?
Well, it's like it feels very welcoming, you know, because like once after 2015, like that was the last time I was in the organization. And, you know, Skipper, we had our fisticuffs, you know, from time to time the next couple of years being in the same division.
Yeah.
But it's been great to be back. I was always in contact with Jay, but to talk more with Jay. And then, you know, for Steve Cohen to be so welcoming back into kind of the organization, and you know, to see Bartolo, saw Johnny Franco, like Hosey. I ran into Hosey. He was sneaking out of there. He always smells so good, man. I gave him a hug. I was like, God, you always smell so good. Thank you, Poppy. Oh, I love you, Murph. So it brings back such good memories that even though it's been now a decade since we've kind of, you know, donned the Mets uniform, we were in the organization for a decade. Like that was where I grew up. That was my home. That's where my family started. And so it has been a lot of fun. And then I get to poke David even more now, you know, since we're both done in the orange and blue again.
There you go. Sandy Alderson was on the show not too long ago, and I asked him if he ever had any regrets about a free agent he didn't sign or let go or a trade he didn't make. And without hesitation, he said, if I had to do it all over again, I would have never let Daniel Murphy go to Washington. Have you ever spoke to Sandy about that, you know, all these years later?
Yes. And that is like, I couldn't ask for a higher praise from Sandy Alderson, who has, I mean, what are we looking at? Half a century in our industry, starting in Oakland. Like, you want us to talk about Moneyball. Like, Moneyball started, it seemed like, in the early 80s when Sandy and Levi Strauss over there. So, like, there's no higher praise I could get. And for him to think that that was a misplay on him, hopefully speaks to how productive, you know, we were when we left. And, but, you know, that's the game. Like, that's just part of the game. There was no malice in that. Like, I think that was the offseason. It's not like he didn't get two good players. Like, it was Drubal Cabrera and Neil Walker, and that ball club went to the postseason. That's the game. But it is high praise.
When we asked him that, and he gave us that answer, because all the fans would have loved to see you stay, but we're so happy that you're back involved. I have one more for you, and then I'll turn it back to TC. One of the most emotional moments during the playoffs this year was when Brandon Nimmo stood near second base with tears in his eyes after the Mets clinched the NLDS at Citi Field against the Phillies. The Game 4 victory was the first time the Mets had won a postseason series at Citi Field. And Nimmo was a lifelong Met, drafted in 2011. So you kind of have similarities there. Prior to leaving the Mets after the 2015 season, you were hitting the postseason for the first time with a team that drafted you. And as a player, what was it like to finally make the postseason with an organization that you grew up in and developed in?
Well, it was like it. I'm trying to think. Like, I just think about the people. So you think about David, who was there the last time the postseason is made. So, like, when I get into the organization in 06, like, there's a light. You know what I mean? There's David, there's Hosey, and then the veterans and Delgado and Pedro. And so, you know, we had been there before while I was in the organization, but then to have David there already, kind of, I would say, waiting and leading us, and then all of the guys I came up with, Duda, Tejada, Flores, I'm going to miss some, Bobby Parnell, like John Neese, like all of these guys that we came up with, Lagares, and Marte reminds me of Lagares. And so, and then the way that Darno fit in and the young pitching, it was kind of felt like a culmination of something that we felt like we were good enough to do, but had never done, you know. And so hats off to Sandy for making some serious additions at the deadline. And they came straight in with Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe, and it's like some real pros that we got. And we caught, I would say, more than a heater, because we played good ball, I feel like, for like 2 months heading in as well too. So, and then, you know, so that's the way I would think of it. Like, looking at each guy after, you know, winning the NLDS or the pennant, I was like, this is like family. You know, we've been doing this a long time together, and this is a ton of fun.
It was. Well, I certainly appreciate your time today. I'm going to toss it back to Terry.
So Murph, you know, you've been so busy doing all the, you know, a lot of the media stuff now. How close are you to coming back, getting back on the field?
Well, I was on the field last night. I'm the bench coach for the 11U Blue Claws, for the oldest Noah, if anybody remembers him with the broom from Chicago in 2015. So it's, Skip, it's not that I wouldn't want to. Like, to go on a campaign that could culminate in a pennant and a chance at a world championship is like, it stirred something up in me that I didn't really know was in there. You know, you walk away from it and think, like, I'll be able to leave that piece of me. But to get a group of, like, men and women and aim at something and to be this deep into it, it got me going. And you think that when you're playing for a world championship, you'll get another bite at the apple, but you don't always get another bite at the apple. And I'm learning that the hard way right now. So
yeah.
I don't know when or if, but I think that one day, if somebody would have me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would like to do that. But these kids are everywhere. They're everywhere, Skipper. You know what I mean?
So is Noah pestering you about getting back on the field and doing some stuff?
So they love going up to New York, you know. So he got to catch the first pitch, not this one because Tolo caught this one for game four, but last year. And so they love heading up there. And that just speaks to how well the Mets roll out the red carpet for us. That, like, my kids don't know how to do a ball game. Like, they take us underneath, like, we're running into baseball players. And so it's great. But they're like, and then the next one, he watches, like, real close, the six-year-old. He's about to be seven. And he hurls himself at the ball like Shoeless Joe Jackson. So that's my advice to any kids, if you're watching this, or dads. Go watch Shoeless Joe Jackson and have your child swing like him. It'll be fun.
Well, Dan, again, I really appreciate your time, and a great time of year. And then, of course, you know, just like John and all the fans who, you know, have sent in and said, hey, you know, it's playoff time. We got to, you know, you got to get Dan Murphy on. We all look back and what a tremendous run that was. And, you know, you led the pack, and I don't think it'll ever be matched again by anybody. So thanks again for coming on the show, and all the best to you and your family.
Well, I appreciate it, Skipper. Thank you, John, as well. And when I was at game four, I had one of the fans actually say, he looked up, he said, you see that pennant? He's like, y'all hung that pennant. And I was like, that's pretty cool. We did hang a pennant. Yeah. So y'all have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Murph. Take care.
Daniel Murphy, always a pleasure to have him on the show. Second time he was here with us, TC, and I see the chemistry between you two is still very strong and solid.
You know, you talk when you want to talk baseball, Dan Murphy is a baseball player. I've told you the story, John. When I first came to the Mets, Dan was going to be the first baseman with the Mets back in 2011, and he tore his knee up in spring training, so he missed the whole year. And so I was going through the minor leagues at the time, and anytime I was in St. Lucie, I would go out to the field to watch the rookie league team or to watch the team in the St. Lucie A Club, and Dan Murphy's sitting there watching games, talking to the young players. He is we got to get him back in the game somehow. Yes. You heard him talk about hitting and how he explains it. He's outstanding. I'm really thrilled to have him back on the show.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to bring him back. And now it's time for another Tunnel to Towers Amazing Hero of the Week segment. Let's go to that right now.
Meeting with some of the firemen and first responders at the stadium, having some of them opening up, and whether they're involved in 9/11 or just anything else, it's a really demanding job, and it can be an emotional one. Whether you lose a dear friend or get seriously hurt, like, that's a way different perspective than going 0-for-4. As a player of the Mets, I feel like for me, I have a responsibility to give back to such a strong and gracious community.
Pete, you did it. How much fun was that?
That was a blast. I'm just happy that I could donate 5% of this money to Tunnels to Towers. I mean, I have the utmost respect for the people that put their lives on the line every single day.
When we found Tunnels to Towers, it was like, this is perfect. This is authentically New York. It was a no-brainer for us.
I came from a military background. Both my grandpas served. I mean, I feel really strongly about people who put their lives on the line every single day. And for me, I think that's kind of overlooked every once in a while. It's something that we all kind of take for granted. Hopefully other people can be inspired to help out.
Our foundation will take this money because of you, Pete, and we can help others to make sure that when they go out and they protect our country, or they protect our community, and when they leave their family behind, that we are going to take care of these families. And I thank you for that, and God bless you.
That moment, so incredibly like heartfelt and heartwarming, and just seeing the good immediately right away and the impact, that's really important, and I'm so happy to do it. Heroes don't wear capes. Like, heroes are just regular people that just do incredibly exceptional things. Hey, I'm Pete Alonso. Let's go Mets, and let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Go to t2t.org for more information about how your donation can make a difference.
We'll have another T2T Amazing Hero on next week's show, and that'll wrap it up this week, Terry. We had another wonderful show. The postseason is here. The Mets are continuing. I just want to remind everybody, if you haven't already, subscribe to our YouTube channel. That is at the Terry Collins Show. You could follow Terry on Instagram and at X at @TerryCollins_10. You could follow me at John Arezzi. Until next week, when we will previewing a potential Mets World Series appearance, fingers crossed. This is John Arezzi for Terry Collins. Best of luck to the Mets this week against the Dodgers in the NLCS as it continues. Let's go, Mets.